Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Guardians taking on the Astros once again tonight, finally breaking that 10-game losing streak. Pretty good feeling. Pretty good thing, I think, to have a just real solid feeling about. It's like, take your win, run with it. Like, I'm not saying that again that they're back, but, I mean, listen, if you look at it in your last 11, you're 1-10, looks really sad. In your last one, you're 1-0. I think that's about the mentality you have to keep. You got to take a football mentality with the Guardians. It's like, hey, every week's a new week. Every day's a new day. 1-0 today. Until probably the end of today, where you probably get shot down by Hunter Brown. But it's neither here nor there. We'll react to the Guardians eventually if they wrap up in time, like they did with a solid like 2 minutes yet last night. We'll get to it at some point, more likely than not. But I was a little angry today looking around the world of baseball. And something that, again, it's not going to make you as mad as a 10-game losing streak, but I think that Guardians fans would be right to be slightly upset by it. And that's, yet again, looking across the league and looking at the 2024 draft class and saying, oh, there's another guy heading to the majors. Today would be J.J. Weatherholt, middle infielder, St. Louis Cardinals, a guy who the Guardians most definitely considered going after, was sort of in that range with Bazan of, he's not really a power hitter, but he can hit for average. Same sort of middle infielder, guy that you were looking for. Obviously, they set their sights on Bazana. Jimenez was not stopping them from that. So, I think as you look at, like, J.J. Weatherholt probably was in the exact same category. But this is the part that I think makes you upset, is you can look around this year and just go, okay, well, you know, Jack Caglione has been a horrible, absolutely terrible for the Royals, but he's in the majors. Like, he got called up. He's the guy that's up and playing right now. Nick Kurtz has been okay with the A's. A lot of his productions come from playing in a minor league ballpark that is tailored to hitting. That's where a ton of his productions come, but he's been okay. But you just continue to see guys get called up. Hey, Chase Burns, J.J. Weatherholt now. And it's like, okay, well, the rest of the top of that class is slowly making their way to the majors, and then you look to where the Guardians are, and you look at Travis Bazana, and, well, Travis Bazana is now injured and was also spending time in Akron. Like, he had not even made the jump to make it over to Columbus yet. Meanwhile, everybody else is fast-tracked to the major leagues. And, by the way, what are not terrible baseball teams. Like, the Royals are a better team than you are right now. They called up their early pick. The A's are a worse team than you are, but they've also called up their pick. The Cardinals, probably overall a better team than you are, also calling guys up. And I think you absolutely have to note the fact that, like, yes, as you look at prospects in baseball, all of them take a different route and a different path, right? No prospect is treated equally just because the guy doesn't get the call-up early. And again, part of it's dealing with injuries. But just because you don't get that early call-up doesn't mean that it's a bust of a pick. And in no way am I calling Travis Bazana a bust of a pick. That the jury is way out on being able to say anything in that range. But I think that you look at where the Guardians are right now, and we talk about the idea of calling up young talent, having guys here that could actually produce with the bat, and that's what Bazana was supposed to be able to do. The one thing you looked at him, he was not a stellar defender. He plays second base for a reason, if we're being honest. Like, it doesn't make you just God's gift to defense. It won't happen. But he was supposed to be a consistent bat that brought you average, which also he has not done in the minor leagues. But that's the kind of production you were looking for. And you can make the argument, hey, the Guardians probably wouldn't call him up anyway. I mean, look around. They can't get Chase DeLauder here. They refuse, essentially, to call him up at this point, but they won't call on Chase DeLauder to get him to the majors. What's to say they would have called on Travis Bezanna? Hey, but at some point, your first-round pick makes it undeniable. Chase DeLauder has come pretty close recently to making it undeniable, but there's obviously still the things with injury concerns and wanting him to be healthy and, you know, basically prove that he can be a major league bat. Those things all come into play. But for every other team, those guys have made the jump. And they view them as, hey, it's now time to at least give him the call, even if he ends up getting sent back at some point. He's already going through that first round of getting called up to the majors, and then guys usually get sent back at some point and then called back up. But the Guardians just play this on the slowest track possible. And drafting Bezanna was almost in a way being okay with this path as well. And I think that's what's frustrating to it too, is they looked around at the draft class in 2024 and said, hey, we're going to probably want to spread some of this out. Right? You have a pool of money that you can spend on your draft picks in Major League Baseball. And they were like, well, we don't want to commit to paying our first round pick a boatload of money. We'd rather spend that out across some of the other rounds. And Bezanna's a guy who will sign for a little bit less at that number one pick. So you went and drafted him. I just think the culmination, like if this was a team last year, you have no problem with Bezanna being down. Your team's competing. You have a semi-solidified spot at second base. You can wait on it, even if the plan was still to trade Andrés Giménez, or even if Andrés Giménez was still not on the team and had already been traded. You'd be okay with it. If the team was fun to watch and the team was producing on offense, it's not something that you're just clamoring for and you need to happen. But I think looking around at an offense that is bad, and you can look around and say, hey, there were power-hitting bats in that draft class, there were average-hitting bats in that draft class, and you went for the guy who was a little farther out, an Australian baseball player that came over to play in college who was probably going to need a little bit extra time to develop, and you just expected things to be fine in the meantime. You expected to not have to have young bats ready to be called up, ready to go, when a lot of the other people that cover Major League Baseball can look around and say, no, you should have been expecting to need those bats. You should have been expecting to need the guys that are there. But instead, right now, I'm watching Junkenzie Noel hit, and I'm watching, who's playing second today? Listen, we don't have Will Wilson in the lineup. I think it's Angel Martinez at second, but we do have some combination of Daniel Schneeman playing third, Brian Arroquia with short. Like, you don't have a very solidified lineup, and certainly not one that can hit the ball. So I look around and it's like, yeah, I mean, if we're getting mad over prospects, I'm not saying that we should be, going to the moon. Again, like it's a 10-game losing streak. But it should be something that bothers you. The way that the front office has handled the entirety of the last year and it goes to the draft is something that makes me, somewhat angry. I'm waiting for a team to actually go through and make the correct decisions when it comes to hitters. And it feels like time and time again, they failed to do so. They failed to bring you bats that are legitimately going to produce, and they failed to actually, act on those bats. It's just another piece. And they went very heavy into the pitching side in 2024. Even early in the draft, a majority of their picks ended up being arms. High school arms, a couple of college arms, but a lot of high school arms, guys that have to develop. That's fine. When I see first-round draft pick, I expect that guy to be in the majors relatively soon. It's why we're clamoring for a guy like Chase DeLauder. Because you drafted him, now what, we're coming up on 3 years ago, and you have yet to see him. It's a guy that you want to see in the majors, a guy you want to see play. Bezanna's not going to be any different. Obviously, you have a longer leash there because he's a 2024 pick, but as I see the other 2024 picks already being ahead in the development phase, already being ahead and getting ahead of the curve of going through problems and everything else, and like you run through your struggles, it's just going to be another step that the Guardians are behind in trying to get the offense to where it needs to be. And that's what bothers me. That's what should make you angry, is it's not just, oh, well, they moved off of a piece and then, they moved off Andrés, but they gave you Travis. Well, in reality, they could have gave you J.J. Weatherholt, right, who's now a major leaguer. And I'm not saying J.J. is going to be better than Travis, but he would have been here producing faster. You would have actually had a middle infielder to call up. Again, I don't probably think that they make that decision. They probably don't make the call up because, Now Juan Brito ends up on the IL, and because you had wanted to call Brian Rocchio up to the majors, you didn't get to see any of Brito playing in the major leagues. So it's a good chance that, you know, whoever they drafted would still be down there. But it's the same thing. It's the principle of continuously passing on opportunities to make a team right now that is better. Right? A team that in 2025 should be competing. Coming off of the finish that you did last year, the ALCS, which is, I think is going to continue and will always be a fair point to bring up in this argument, you decided to make the offense worse. And you were okay and have continued to remain okay with that offense being bad. And that's something that just can't make sense. You can't make sense of everything that the Guardians have done on the offensive side and just be perfectly okay with it. Every move that that front office has made this year has been early return a flop. Again, we brought it up last segment, the idea of, you know, bringing in arms to try to help you. They failed the free agency period this year. It has been absolutely horrendous. They did not make a right move in free agency. And that's where you're assessing. And I think that's where a lot of the frustrations come through. And it's like, okay, you're finally waiting for this team to take the big swing. And they just never do. The names who were the big swings, who were going to get paid more money on their rookie deals and get bigger signing bonuses, are not the guys that are here. They're playing for other major league clubs at this point while you continue to wait because they decided, well, we'd rather have more cracks at this thing than necessarily a bigger crack at it. And that's the thing that frustrates me. I can sit here and watch a team that just does not care, but it is continuously told you over the course of this season and this offseason, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, you gave it a good run last year, but don't expect that again. Don't expect to be back in the same spot that you were. We're not actually going to commit to a team that showed promise and showed life. We're going to rather try to spin that around to a team that, well, they're young and it'll buy us some more time. It's over and over again. They've done great things. I can't argue with the fact that they've made 6 out of the last 9 playoffs that they've had a chance to compete for. They've done great. But I think you can also isolate 2025 and call it bad. You shouldn't push that to the side either. It's not just because they've done great things in the past. They are a great front office. Like, this year was bad, and that's a tally mark in that column of being like, oh, this wasn't a good season for you. We're weighing good against bad. You're lucky right now to still have good more than bad, but it's not something that I'm just going to look at a rosy and be like, ah, they'll get it again next year. Every time you play in the middle and don't go and lean into one side or the other, I'm not just handing away free compliments. 216-474-0092. Just sitting there and watching more prospects be called up to make you angry as a Guardians fan. Again, you can also get to me on X at Volnick Jake, V-O-L-I-N-E-C Jake. Coming up here in about 5 minutes, the Cavs heading into 2026. I continuously hear people say, you know, Eastern Conference finals, everything else on where the Cavs should be. Lonzo Ball made his own comments on that. And I want to know what would actually make you happy. Again, in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. It's time to talk a little bit of Cavs because a lot of things being thrown out and a couple of Cavs players now speaking to the media. Like, we heard from Larry Nance Jr., who, I mean, had some remarkable things to be thrown out. Being like, yeah, I mean, you know, I've played for a couple other teams in the past few years, but yeah, I've basically been rooting for the Cavs the entire time. I've been a Cavs fan even while playing for those teams. It's like, I don't know that's the right mentality as an NBA player, but thank you very much. I take the support, and I'm glad you're here now. It wouldn't be very happy if, like, Donovan came out tomorrow, and he's like, yeah, I mean, listen, guys, I've been here, but the entire time, I've just been watching in awe as the Knicks play basketball in the postseason. Like, no, we don't say that. No. You need to be Cleveland through and through. But you being Cleveland through and through when you're outside of Cleveland, yeah, we take that, we run with it here. But Larry's not the only one talking. Lonzo Ball also speaking to the media and threw out, I don't know that I call it a bold claim, but the mentality and the way that he's currently thinking about it, captured by Cleveland Cavaliers on SI. Here's Lonzo's mentality heading into this year with the Cavs.
Obviously, we know how good the Cavs are. You know how good they've been in the past. And I think that this year we have a, you know, great chance to go for it all. And that's really all I'm focused on.
So just this idea that, I mean, it's basically ring or nothing. He's focused on winning it all, and that's it. Now, great mentality. And if we're being entirely honest, a mentality that the Cavs themselves, I would hope, have. Like, from top to bottom. I mean, I don't know that you can look at the front office and Kobe Altman right now and say they have that mentality of we're going to go win it all this year. So I don't think that necessarily looks like complacency in roster construction after being bounced out in the second round. Like, I think if you're going for it all, you'd probably be looking to shake things up, bring in another player that can help you win instead of running it back. You can't say, I'm not going to sit up here and tell you it's the wrong decision to run it back. Just doesn't feel like a go-in-all-for-it move. But I would hope that the message around the locker room, around the practice facility, and throughout the season should be, we're going for it all. We're trying to win everything. But, okay, so Lonzo's saying it's basically ring or nothing. And then he can basically look around and say they have to get to a certain point or this season's a bust.
At Maurice's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Maurice's.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
I think for a lot of people last year, that was getting to an Eastern Conference Finals, right? Like, you have to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals or this season is a failure. And we all walk away from it, and I don't think you'll find it very hard to find somebody who'd tell you that the season was a failure because they didn't make it to that point. I think we all walk away feeling that exact same way, that if they would have at least made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, we could have said that was progress, they got better, and so on and so forth. I just think part of that changes this year, partially due to the fact that there's no Tatum, there's no Halliburton in the East. The East is as wide open as we continuously say as it's ever been and as likely as it will ever be. Like, the Knicks are really, at this point, your only competition unless you want to throw the Magic into that mix. But that's your prime competition. That's really who you're up against right now, is saying, all right, well, we have to beat the Knicks. And that's it. Like, that is the one team that you find as true competition. I just don't think that making it to an Eastern Conference Finals next year would be enough. Like, we were on this path of sort of linear progression. And as you were going through and you were saying, all right, well, you know, if we want to go through, win a championship, make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, we'd like to go farther. We'd like to be able to, you know, at the point most of the season we were talking about, take down the Boston Celtics and hopefully, you know, punch our ticket to a finals. But had you have lost to the Celtics or, you know, matched up with Indiana in the Eastern Conference Finals and ended up losing that series, I think you could probably make an argument that the team's fine. Like, that it wasn't a complete failure of a season. They got better as long as they played a tough series. But you kind of skip Eastern Conference Finals as your step now. Like, I don't look at this team as just getting there and being like, oh, well, at least they got better. You know, championship windows don't last where you can make linear progression step by step, year after year, especially after you stall out for a year. Like, I don't even know that I truthfully would have been satisfied with bowing out in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. From where this team was and raising the bar through the regular season and the product that they put out. I think you were past just making the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, hey, you were bottom line, you pretty much got to lose this thing in like seven or maybe an incredibly competitive six to say that, yeah, we got better and we feel good about our chances moving forward. But you weren't in that spot. You didn't have that free opportunity to do so. And now, as you look at where the East is, I think the only thing as a Cavs fan that makes me happy is saying we got to the NBA Finals. Like, we should be kings of the East. And that's the only way that this team can really bank on their mentality is being that sort of king of the East. I just don't see how anybody would be satisfied. Like, you've backed yourself into a corner of needing to be the best. And because of that, you look at the way that the roster is built, and when you run it back, you heighten that as well. Like, if you don't move off of Jared Allen, which is still on the card, it's still on the table, you could absolutely still move off of Jared this offseason. I'm not saying that you can't. But if you so choose to say, you know what, we're going to keep this thing together, we're going to run it back the way that it looks right now, I think you absolutely have to be in a spot to make the finals to make people happy. And I don't think Cavs fans should settle for anything less. If anything, you should be shooting even higher than that. You should say, all right, this team, if they're going to actually make us happy, you might even have to win the NBA Finals. I think that's a step too far, but all right. You want to continue to put out the product and keep making this sell to me that this team needs to get better on the margins. They need to just improve everything other than the star power. But right now, the star power, we have it. We have the guys in place. We have the core. Trust us. This is a team that is going to win a championship. Guess what? You have to deliver on that promise. Like, hey, you need to actually go through and make some progress towards showing me that you're not out in the West. Like, right now, a lot of the teams in the West can make a really tough decision. And to be like, all right, do I really go for it all right now? Even if I have a decent core, or the Thunder going to be too much to overcome? But in the West, you get a little bit of leeway. Like, whatever the Timberwolves are trying to build, if they never get past the Thunder, you might not look at it as a complete failure. If the Nuggets don't get past the Thunder this year, I don't think fans are going to be viewing that as a failure. It's just an absolute, you know, downer of a season. It might be, well, you ran into the best team in the NBA. If you're the Cavs sitting in the East, like, as soon as you built a roster that you're selling as a championship team, yeah, you shouldn't be being pushed to contention anymore by the Orlandos and the Milwaukees and everybody else who is half trying to make competitive in Eastern Conference. It should be only the top of the top teams, which to me all rely and all sit out West. You can't just expect things to fall into your lap and expect things to get better. If you want to make fans happy, I think it's make it to the finals or bust. That's where it is for me. Same question was asked to John Fanta when he joined Nick and JP on Afternoon Drive today, and he gave what his response would be.
It has to be the mindset every single day in that room. And I think that that's why, you know, you hear the amount of chatter that you do across NBA circles about what the Cavaliers are thinking about or what they might do with their roster still with the time that they have. But here's the deal. Tyrese Haliburton goes down. Jason Tatum goes down. These injuries have massive effects on the Eastern Conference. The doorway is wide open. But to me, it's more important if you work through some different things and you figure out how you're going to get an identity that's conducive to winning in the playoffs. And I know that's hard to do, but you have to figure out a way to do it, because if this thing flops next season and you're not at least in the Eastern Conference Finals, then what was the point? What was the point of this whole operation, this whole endeavor? It's championship or bust season for the Cavaliers.
So, John, right at the end, everything I agreed with up until basically the last point that he made, which was you have to get to an Eastern Conference Finals. Again, I don't know, and maybe I'm off on this for where the rest of the city is, but if you make the Eastern Conference Finals, that's not really a pat on the back for me this year. I'm not like, good job, guys. You got there. You did it. Let's actually go for broke now. Like, let's see if we can do this. It's going to be, congratulations, you did what was expected of you. Like, if you walk away as a top four team in the NBA next year, right? By the way, that the playoffs would play out, maybe not by standard power rankings, but if you walked away as one of the final remaining four teams, I think that is your expectation. Like, you have to get there. That is the bottom line. You should be one of those teams, and it's not questionable. I don't give out rewards and prizes for doing what's expected of you. It's all right. Now you get the reward and the prize when you accomplish past that. But it's still going to be disappointing. Like, when a team does what they're supposed to, I think ultimately the feeling around that team is still disappointment. It's going to be the same thing if, you know, the Browns go out and they win five or six games. still going to be disappointed with the season. And if they were projected at 8-10 and to lose a playoff game, if they won 10 and lost a playoff game, you would still be like, I mean, it was all right, but it was disappointing. Like, we were hoping for more there. And it doesn't change with where the Cavs are. The expectations you make in Eastern Conference Finals, everything on top of it is a bonus, but I'm disappointed when you do what you're supposed to. I'm not just going to be happy about it. This Cavs team needs to go above and beyond. They need to actually show progress. And a lot of the points that I agree with John are in that category. Like, you need to go through and show me progress and how you're going to get better as a playoff team. That needs to be your focus throughout the regular season. And it needs to produce results. You need to show me that you play a style of basketball conducive to winning in the playoffs. And until you do that, I will not be satisfied and I will not be happy. So the bar for happiness for the Cavs heading into a 2025-26 season, it got a lot higher than it was last year. And it wasn't from the expectations they put on themselves through their product last year. It was just by the nature of the way that you build rosters in the NBA. Like, hey, you do this to yourself. And one of the things that we ripped the Guardians for that we talked about before was sitting there and basically never risking it, never going for it, because it's a safe thing to do. And you can't really rip on the front office a ton when they don't go for it and then don't give you results. Well, the other side of that is, yeah, it puts you at risk. But that risk should be a good thing. That should be what you're striving for. And the Cavs have, I mean, at least shown you some risk, not this offseason, but going and acquiring Donovan, trying to be a top team in the East, making changes at coach. Like, you went through and you've gone with risky moves just to say, hey, we're actually going for this and we expect to be one of the top teams. There's high expectations. Now it's time to live up to those expectations. 216-474-0092. What makes 2025-26, the upcoming season for the Cavs, a successful season? What actually leaves you walking away happy as a Cavs fan? For me, it's nothing less than a finals appearance. That is a good season to me. You win the East from now on until Donovan's gone, that's a good season. Anything less than that at this point, having been able to build the roster around him, have the freedom to move around and do what you want with this team, anything less now, you're just not cutting it. You've had the time. You've built the pieces. You've gotten the pieces that you want and you said are good enough to win. Donovan has said it. Kobe Altman has said it. Kenny Atkinson has talked very highly of this group. All right, so you tell me you have the roster. Please, for the love of God, show me that you have the roster. Again, 216-474-0092. What leaves you walking away happy as a Cavs fan at the end of the next season? What result is it? And as well, the dumbest conversation with the easiest answer. Just pure disrespect to one of the best athletes of all time. Coming up at 8:40 on Overtime with Jake Volnick, right here with you on The Fan. The internet produced one of the dumbest questions that I think has ever been concocted in general, and did it surrounding the 4th of July. And the conversations continue to persist. I still see people chiming in, giving their opinions, and trying to find the true solution. And obviously, as we get to the 4th of July, it's only one man's day on the 4th of July, okay? We got ripped of it last year, but that's very possibly the greatest athlete of our generation, our time, maybe the best one you'll ever watch. That's Joey's Chestnut when it comes to competitive eating. And specifically as it comes to competitive eating and hot dogs. The guy put out what was a quote-unquote disappointing performance by taking down over 70 hot dogs in 10 minutes. Okay? Might be gross to some people. Is reality. Dude does it for a living. But the question being thrown out there is a full-blown race. One hot dog in 100 meters. Joey Chestnut versus Usain Bolt. Who actually wins? And to me, it's like, it's a non-starter. Like, Joey Chestnut's hands down a winner. Like, 100 meters, yes, Usain Bolt is the fastest man alive. It's not a lot of ground to cover, and you take down the speed of a hot dog, it's not even close. And the most damning piece of evidence I have behind it is people are like, I wonder how fast I could eat one hot dog. And then they're like, I'm sure I'm going to take this down in like 15 seconds. And they take a video of it. It's like 40 seconds later and they've eaten one hot dog. I'm like, okay, well, Joey Chestnut probably could have eaten two hot dogs and ran 200 meters in 40 seconds. And probably alternating them, like hot dog, 100 meter, hot dog, 100 meter, and managed to do that by the time that you finished your first hot dog. I don't think Usain Bolt can take one down nearly as fast as that to even make up the marginal difference. Like, you take the average speed at which somebody's going to run a 100 meter dash, which, and then you can add a couple seconds onto it, because I'm sure Joey Chestnut is no world class athlete as it comes to sprinting. But I mean, if you're being incredibly generous, we'll say like 25 seconds, which I think is far too long. Like, you're probably more in like the 20 second range. And the fact that he takes down a hot dog in like 5 seconds. One.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hot dog, like 5 seconds, it's down. Bun and all. Okay, so in totality, that's like 26 seconds. It might take Usain Bolt that long to eat a hot dog. I don't get how this is a conversation. Boom, top of your head, thinking about it. Is this a race? Does Usain Bolt have a chance? Am I crazy?
So I'm with you, Jake, because you got to figure, okay, if once Bolt finishes that hot dog, he's finishing that 100-meter dash in 10 seconds.
Right.
Right, so it would, yeah, I can't configure the math in any way where he could finish just down a whole hot dog in 15 seconds. Like, he might be fast. That doesn't mean he's, even his metabolism is probably faster than average, but that doesn't mean he could actually, like, this is not his area of expertise. It's an art form, Jake.
Yeah, like, taking down a hot dog in 15 seconds, like, when you consider the fact that, like, all right, well, Joey can do it in 5, the average human could probably, like, no, taking down a hot dog in 15 seconds is a real feat. Like, you have to be a wicked human being to be able to do that, too.
Honestly, I just feel awful trying to shove a hot dog down that fast, because you're like, you're wasting it. You can't savor it.
Yeah, which most humans would like to do. They're like, oh,
food, I want to enjoy this.
Yeah. Like, nobody thinks, like, I wonder how fast I could eat this hot dog. And then you take it down in 15 seconds. Like, you can't put...
You're not just swallowing that hot dog. You're swallowing your pride.
Yeah. Entire pride down the drain. You're like, you know what? I don't even care about the food. Not even worried about it.
I have a chance to beat Usain Bolt.
Yeah, like, no, you're not going to be able to. Joey Chestnut, no doubt. Not a chance. Michael Markoch, back there. Any chance Usain Bolt wins this?
I would tend to agree with no.
Okay, so hey, we're a consensus no across the board, which has to bring up the then following question alongside of this. Is, at what point does, like, the distance become enough? Right? Is it 200 meters? Is it 400 meters? When do you think that Usain Bolt actually then has a chance? Because I think, like, if you're going any farther than one lap around, around a traditional track, you're probably going too far. Like, Usain's a sprinter. He's still going to be faster than the average human being. Like, if you go 800, he's going to run that wickedly faster than Joey Chestnut is. But yeah, like, he's going to win that if it's a hot dog in 800 meters. You might as well just put him up against each other running 800. You might as well just give him, hey, can you run 2 laps before Joey can run 1? Like, that's probably more of the race. But at what distance does that become a reality? Because I threw it in to the machine to try to figure out, like, where you are running a 200-meter dash. Like, the average human, and it's still, like, it's not that fast. Like, much slower. Like, you don't gain that much extra time.
What if you did it the other way around, where you had to run the 100 meters and then eat the hot dog? Do you think that would slow Chestnut down? Because, I mean, he would be out of breath whilst eating that hot dog.
So I think you bring up a good point. I think you got a much better chance if you flip him. Like, I think you put Usain Bolt at an insane disadvantage. How many times do you think he eats a hot dog right before he goes runs 100 meters?
Can't say I would think it's ever been done.
Yeah, I would think that most of those guys probably aren't eating a ton leading up to an event. Like, you're probably, I mean, you're eating. I'm not saying that you're, like, fasting before you go run. Maybe you are. I'm not a sprinter. But I would think that you're keeping your diet, like, a couple hours before, you're probably not eating.
Eating too soon before running is going to slow you down. It can cause cramping. It can cause discomfort, bloating, all sorts of complications.
Yeah. Okay, so the average, you get 30 to 45 seconds, the average person on a 200-meter. If we go out and run a 200 meter, is that buying you enough time? Like, again, if it takes down a hot dog in 30 seconds, and if that's like the average time, I don't think anybody has an average time to eat a hot dog. That's I don't know. That's anybody, the average person is going out and trying to figure that one out. But yeah, like, I think you at a 200, I think you have a legitimate race. Like, that's where it gets into 400. It's easily Usain Bolt. You take down a hot dog and then run one lap around a track. Again, Joey Chestnut's no world-class like athlete when it comes to traditional athletics. But I think 200's like your perfect thing. How do we miss the question? I mean, I know Usain Bolt's known for running the 100-meter dash, but did nobody just calculate fat? Like, okay, so the average person, it's like a 10-second difference at most on a 100-meter dash. You think the average person's taking out a hot dog in 15 seconds? Like, I don't think so. 200, again, then you have a real competition. Because Usain Bolt set a record at running at like 19 seconds when he ran it, the 200-meter, in one of the Olympic events. I think in like 2009, I was reading
Which is an absurd time, by the way.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. But like, okay, so if it takes him 19, and you add on the 30 seconds, you're at about, 50 seconds there. And then you would take the 5 seconds plus the average person, which is 30 to 45 seconds. Like, we're at perfect pace here. That's like, how fast can Usain Bolt take down a hot dog? That's where the conversation comes in. But it's not even close. Not even relatively close.
I need a hot dog company to make this a commercial.
This would be the freest advertising event of all time. You just pull Usain Bolt and be like, hey, would you like to run 100 meters? And eat a hot dog, or run 200 meters and eat a hot dog. Like, it doesn't even need it. You could, I mean, skip commercial, right? A hot dog brand could sponsor an entire event. I mean, we do 10 minutes in Nathan's benefits. I'm sure, I mean, they're on ESPN. They've got to benefit millions of dollars off of this.
You could pack a stadium for that.
That's what I'm saying. You could make this whole, like, we do celebrity boxing events. We can't do a celebrity hot dog sprint off. Okay. We can't, like, what was the, one of the indie races did the, we talked about it on Get a Grip, the Wiener Mobile race. I forget what they called
Oscar
it.
Oscar Mayer.
Yeah, it was the Oscar Mayer Wiener Mobiles, and they went out and they actually they drove them and raced them before. Like, okay, so, and I get that's like a pre-event, but you got people out there watching and like cheering on, literally racing hot dogs, not eating a hot dog and then racing. You could definitely, I mean, even if it's a small stadium, if you did like a high school track, this thing would be packed. A college track, this would be packed.
Yeah, I mean, even just like, Usain Bolt being in the arena, like that's gonna draw attention in itself. But the competition, you hype it up, a little bit of advertising. Oh baby.
So do I go too far? And because I legitimately think this, like I jokingly start the segment by calling him like one of the greatest athletes of all time. I legitimately think Joey Chestnut's one of the greatest athletes of all time.
I would put an asterisk next to it, but yes, he is.
Like, I get, like, competitive eating is not football, basketball, like, your traditional sport. But in terms of being a competitor, I mean, you don't get more dominant than he ever
was. It's a competitive skill. It's like, it's something that you can legitimately be the best at that's competitive. And you, it's hard to call it a sport, though. I mean,
I feel like, so the argument that I always make on this, because this is like always an argument that comes up before the July, because people will be like, I'm not watching. Oh, that's disgusting. I'm not watching people eat hot dogs. Like, my argument is like, okay, so you watch sports because it's people that are the very best at what they do, competing in a, a competition, a game, and pushing their body to the max limits. Is that not exactly what's happening in a hot dog eating contest?
I guess it's the competition aspect that makes it a sport.
Right, like if it's just him sitting there being like, how fast can I take down a hot dog? Like that's not really, it's not a sport. When you line 15 people up and you go, how fast can all of you eat a hot dog and how many can you eat? And again, like that is the maximum of like pushing your body to its absolute limits in the maximum as high as it can go, that's competitive hot. Like, nobody could even think to take down 70 hot dogs and actually live to tell the day. I wouldn't be able to function after like 10. I've always wondered how it would fare in a hot dog eating contest. And then they had one at our college before one of our games. I did not compete. One of my friends competed and wore a full suit and finished two hot dogs, a 5-minute contest.
Full suit. I love that.
Yeah. Full, 3-piece suit. Went out there and finished two hot dogs in 5 minutes.
Is there a different food that you feel like you could eat competitively in?
I feel like wings would be a good one, but at some point...
It's tough with the bones.
Yeah, like, I don't know how fast I could take down a wing. Like, that... I could eat wings left and right. It's my favorite food on the planet. I don't know if I could actually compete in taking down a wing fast enough and clearing the bone quick enough to actually make it like, oh, yeah, you're actually doing something here. Like, these people are wild.
I want to compete in a pasta eating contest. Pasta I think eating. I could give someone a run for their money in that.
What kind of noodle do you go to?
Anything but rotini.
Wow, just pure rotini hate.
But spaghetti's probably the easiest way to do it, to set it up. You know, just go to town on a big bowl of spaghetti, keep trading them in and out, you know, fill it up. I think I could go for a really long time in that one.
That would be, yeah, I think I would stick to, I don't know, like, I'm not like the biggest hot dog person, but I feel like that's the easiest. It's the most it's studied on. I feel like if I was training and I had a chance, I would have the most chance to work at hot dogs because there's so much tape on it. I could just go back and watch the last like 30 hot dog eating contests and be like, you know what? We got some different methods here that we can see what works. I saw an interview with Joey Chestnut talking about how he like legitimately trains his neck muscles, like trains specific muscles that most people don't target in order to do it. And I'm like, okay, well, this is why you're an athlete. This is why you're the greatest athlete of all time. Because as soon as we start talking about that, we've stepped across a new level. It's not like he goes out and competes one day a year. This dude owns like a ridiculous amount of records. It's just the nationally broadcasted one is your 4th of July hot dog eating contest. 216-474-0092. Would Usain Bolt ever actually fare any sort of chance in a one hot dog, 100 meter? Or you can go 200 meters. I think that's where it gets interesting. But I'm taking Joey Chestnut all day. It's a 1,000% of sport. He's 1,000% the greatest athlete of our time. When we come on back here in about 5 minutes, we'll get to Get a Grip, as we always do at 9 o'clock on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.